Sister.
Morning, Your Honors. My name is Peng Chien Ma for the petitioner in this case.
Good morning, Mr. Ma.
Your Honors, in this case, we request the court to consider three issues in reviewing this matter. First of all, we have to revisit the application of the Real ID Act. In this case, the judge rejected, denied relief based on her perception that the respondent, the petitioner, did not provide enough evidence to support his claim for asylum.
I think we should start with jurisdiction, because the government argues that we lack jurisdiction to consider whether the asylum claim was timely, and I think we need you to respond to that argument before we get into anything else.
Your Honor, whenever we present a case to the immigration court, the three requests, one is asylum, and the other is withholding of removal, and also relief under the torture convention. Each time, and sometimes during the testimony, during the hearing of the case, there is evidence showing that there are exceptions to the one-year bar. That's the only issue related to the asylum claim. In this case, I would like to address that issue first. The judge and also the BIA applied the one-year rule to bar the claim for asylum. In this case, that the respondent testified to the reasons why he did not file an application within a year. This is a factual issue. The respondent, my client,
He gave three reasons why, because he didn't speak English, he didn't understand the law, he didn't have money to hire a lawyer, and the IJ found that those circumstances were not extraordinary, that he didn't meet his burden, and that's why she denied.
That's part of the reason. And also he testified, and also we submitted evidence that he had a child who was born with the tumor on the face. As the child grew, the tumor grew. They had to go to many places for the removal of the tumor to save the life of this child. After he entered the country, he received news that this child has to be taken to Beijing, to Shanghai, and other places to seek medical treatment. Of course, in other aspects of life, China is still lagging behind the United States. But in terms of medical expenses, it has caught up the United States. This is a poor family, and he lost a store. He did not have a means of livelihood, but he tried very hard to save the life of the child. But he was so busy working at restaurants, various places, in order to save some money to send back to China to save the child. As a matter of fact, at the time of the hearing, the child died of the tumor already. But it is our position that his circumstances, his efforts to save the child, after several years in the United States, he was busy making money to save the child. That's a very valid reason for not being able to file within a year. That certainly is an exception to the one-year rule. That's our position. We believe that both the BIA and the judge, the immigration court, erred in this respect. Your Honor, that's what I have to say regarding that issue. And as to the credibility issue, of course, the judge found him credible. Actually, the actual language was that she could not find him not credible because of some inconsistencies. And she found that his testimony was consistent, detailed. Even under the Real ID Act, if the testimony is consistent, detailed, then the an applicant is eligible for asylum. But in
the, well, but the government pointed out that he has never explained why he cannot obtain a corroborating affidavit from his wife. And where in the record will we find an explanation for why it would be unreasonable to require this corroboration when the record tells us that he is still in contact with his wife?
Your Honor, the had the wife provided a letter, I don't know the, of course, I don't know the circumstances, the probably because of the health of the child, they were not, he didn't pay attention to the, to a letter from his wife. But Your Honor, certainly his testimony was found to be consistent.
To his wife, but the problem is he spoke to his wife 2 months before the hearing. The circumstances were dire, according to your client. And so his ability to stay in this country and make money to help the child, that was something very much on his mind. So he had an opportunity then to ask his wife for that.
I understand, Your Honor. The first of all, his testimony was found to be consistent. If a letter was had been submitted, the I don't know how much weight the judge would have given this letter.
Well,
a letter,
I mean,
from the,
we would know had it been in the record.
Yes, but the fact is that no letter was submitted from his wife. But if the tip of the balance is just this letter from his wife, to me, it's a very, very strong case. And that just the judge should not have denied relief just based on the lack of a letter from the wife. And sometimes we have letters from family members. Some immigration judges simply say, oh, this letter, I don't give much weight to the letter because it's from a family member and overseas.
Well, she pointed she pointed out in her ruling that there were no affidavits from any of these other merchants whose businesses were destroyed in addition to the wife. I mean, the IJ was just looking for some corroboration of his situation.
She was trying.
I think she was really trying hard to help.
Yeah, that involves the issue of the application.
Because otherwise the IGA is in a situation where, I mean, it's very difficult. She can find your client credible, but to not have corroborating evidence is I mean, it's...
Your Honor, to me, if he was found credible, the whether there is corroboration is not so important. First of all, he was credible. That means that the judge believed what had happened to him in China. That's we have to look at the inconsistencies mentioned by the judge. One is the date on which he was arrested. Just he first testified that April 20th. And later,
we don't have to look at the inconsistencies because she found him credible.
Right.
All she requested was some corroborating evidence. By the way, you're into your rebuttal.
Do you want to save
Some time?
Yes. My time is over?
Well, you're in your rebuttal time.
Yeah, I can finish. If I don't have time, I just waive for a rebuttal.
Okay.
The second issue is whether he was persecuted because of his political opinion. And the judge mentioned and cited some cases for the proposition that the taking of real estate, taking of property, is not the kind of harm, the enumerated grounds. But I take it differently. We take it differently. In China, the populace is excluded from the political process. They don't have any power in terms of decision making. And this one is not a pure taking of property. He was harmed because of his demonstrating his protesting in front of a government building. That's when he was arrested, he was harmed. That certainly is an expression of political opinion, or at least expression of opinion. Whether it's political or not, we believe it is political. Because had I lived in the 50s or earlier, the party would assign a member of the party a wife. Certainly it's a private matter. But under the circumstances, even that matter is political. In this case, it is political in nature. He was persecuted based on his political opinion, and we request that the court reverse the decision of the lower courts.
Thank you, Mr. Ma. Mr. Spurlock, it's still good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, I'm Matthew Spurlock on behalf of the United States. This petitioner in this case arrived in the United States in 2004. Over 3 years later, he applied for asylum. And as we argued in our brief, there's no dispute about the fact that this asylum application was late. We do, however, argue that in this case, this court lacks jurisdiction to consider the decision of the agency to find that the asylum application was in fact untimely and denied it as such. Moving on, petitioner then, after filing asylum, testified before the immigration judge that he was persecuted based on a political opinion. However, when he testified before the immigration judge, when the immigration judge pushed him on what is your exact political opinion, he was unable to give a clear political opinion and merely referred to the incident that gave rise to his claim of persecution, which was having his shop destroyed and the subsequent sit-in that he engaged in which case he was detained and the mistreatment that he received after that. But at no time was he ever able to describe exactly what his specific political opinion was. First of all, with regard to also, we talked a little bit about the corroboration issue. In this case, given that asylum is no longer an option for the petitioner because the asylum application was untimely, he's still eligible for withholding of removal. And in this case, the agency correctly found that petitioner failed to meet his burden for withholding of removal because he failed to demonstrate he would more likely than not lose life or freedom in China on account of a protected ground. And talking specifically about corroboration, the agency also found that he failed to meet his burden with respect to withholding of removal, where he failed to present sufficient corroborating evidence of his claim. As was sort of discussed earlier, the immigration judge, in fact, did not find the petitioner in this case not credible. And she did list a series of inconsistencies, but she found, given these inconsistencies, they're not enough necessarily for an adverse credibility finding. However, because those inconsistencies and because the lack of corroboration went directly to the nature of the petitioner's claim in this case, i.e., did he have a shop? Did he, in fact, get arrested after the shop was destroyed? And was the shop, in fact, destroyed? Those were all pieces of evidence that the immigration judge looked to and said, this is evidence that we could have received from a simple affidavit from the petitioner's wife. And there was no reasonable explanation for why that affidavit wasn't provided, given he was in fact in contact with his wife. And the second issue is petitioner did not meet his burden to show eligibility for withholding removal on account of a protected ground. And I would bring to the court's attention this court's case in Haichun Liu, which is not meaningfully different from this case. Both in the facts and the court's finding in that case, where you had 16 workers who were organized by the petitioner in that case to go demonstrate after losing their jobs at a government-owned factory. And he was subsequently arrested for an emotional outburst during that demonstration, very similar to what happened in this case. And in that case, the court looked to the record did not compel a conclusion he was mistreated because of his political activities in arranging the protest, and they listed several examples of activities that would be considered political activity that would lead to some sort of evidence that this was on account of a political ground. And they listed things such as publishing a political article, something along those lines. There were a few others that they listed, being a public gadfly, I believe I also mentioned. And in this case, there's no evidence that's what occurred at all. All the evidence in this case would compel the conclusion that the petitioner was simply seeking compensation for the loss of his shop. And the only distinction that the petitioner makes between the Liu case and this case is a matter of degree. In the Liu case, the petitioner was lost his job as a result of the factory being closed and lost insurance and benefits and those lines. And the petitioner argues that, well, that's different than what happened here, because in this case, the petitioner lost his shop and all manner of livelihood. But the question is not a matter of degree of what was lost. The matter is whether it was political argument, whether the content of what the petitioner was doing was political. And that's,
well, if he'd been protesting the government's complicity in the demolition of someone else's store, would that have been political speech?
It's possible, Your Honor, that that could be political speech.
Well, then why wouldn't it be political speech just because he has an economic stake in it?
Well, I don't think it's specifically if you have an economic stake. It's if you're protesting the general policy of the whatever the Chinese government is at that time. If that's the nature of what he's protesting against, that would be different. But that's not what he was. At all times, he's always said, I was going to get compensation for my personal loss of my store. It wasn't I'm going to go protest against the Chinese government's policies or Chinese corruption and allowing the developers to destroy people's shops to put in different newer developments. That's not what he was doing. He was just simply trying to get compensation for what he was doing. Unless the court had subject to any further questions from the panel, the government would just simply say that in this case, the petitioner's not met his burden for withholding removal, and the record does not compel the conclusion that the agency erred in this case.
Thank you. You used up all your time, but I'll give you 1 minute. Is there something you can say in a minute?
Again, Your Honor, as to whether he protested against the government on issues involving the large population or just for his own interest, it's different. It's not a private dispute between himself and the government. It's an issue involving the life, affecting a lot of residents over there. He did, because here in the United States, if someone lost his home because of a taking, he's not satisfied. He could go to the street to protest. Nothing will happen to him. But in China, you cannot do it. That's certainly political. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mott. The case will be taken under advisement, and thanks to both parties.